It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break.
But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to chat with Mark Monchek. He is the Chief Opportunity Officer of the Opportunity Lab, and we're going to talk about how do you scale in a landscape of disruption when all is changing around you. How do you put together a solid footing and a solid foundation? And one of the reasons I wanted to have Mark on the show is that, you know, as you know, running a business is a delicate dance. You want to have the systems in it that create consistent experiences and consistent results. But you also need to be nimble enough to make changes when that's needed. And that means we need to create what Mark calls a culture of opportunity. You know, you hear about corporate culture. Well, how can you create an opportunity-minded culture in your business? What does that involve? Well, it involves a mindset of not always reacting with fear at every change. Because, you know, the old expression, nothing lasts forever but the rocks. Or another platitude, the only constant is change. Yeah, don't you hate that when somebody says that to you and things are just blowing up in your face? Yes, well, but part of baking that resilience into the DNA of your business is what allows you to be a little more nimble and maybe a little less resentful when these changes occur. And that's why I am very eager to hear Mark talk about this for my own business. You know, it also means that you're training your team to look for opportunities and to see themselves as contributors, not just cogs in the wheel grinding out your success. And one of the ways that that helps you is that not everything is all on your shoulders, that you're not the only one who's out there developing resources and connections. The rest of your team and your staff is too. It also means when you have a culture of opportunity, you're evaluating the patterns that work and you're leveraging what works instead of maybe replaying some of the same old things over and over again. So it helps because you alone are not the one seeking opportunities to grow your business, and you alone are not the one responsible for shoring up the ship if there's a downturn in the economy or a major customer leaves. You know, that's something we touch on in our special report, 10 Steps to a $1 Million Business, because if your business really just focuses and relies so heavily on you, you're quickly going to reach an upper limit. So to get out of that rut, go to businessexponential.com/podreport to get your copy. And again, discussing that culture of opportunity is one of the things that I'm looking forward to exploring with our guest this week. So a little bit about Mark Monchek. Mark has a passion for empowering conscious leaders to build great companies that make a difference in the world. Through his strategy and leadership development forum, the Opportunity Lab, Mark discovers and develops opportunities that merge profitability with sustainable growth. That creates organizations that are more conscious. What does that mean? That it's not just about the bottom line. It's that they're making life better for their customers, their employees, and their communities. Mark has worked with leaders from Google, Apple, Etsy, Warby Parker, Eileen Fisher, General Electric, the Wharton School, and the United Nations, just to name a few. And he's helped them take their organizations to that next level of sustainable growth. Mark is a filmmaker, author, and public speaker, and his Opportunity Lab video series inspires conscious business through thoughtful insights, interviews, and media recommendations, and all to build a community of leaders committed to doing well by doing good. And we're delighted to have him here on Business Breakthrough. Mark, thanks so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Nina. I'm very excited to share what I have learned about the landscape of disruption, about what's happening in business, and to talk with you about what your listeners want to know.
Yeah, and we've known each other for a while, so it'll be a wonderful, wide-ranging conversation. But I think one of the things that we both honed in on is that while there are these old expressions, nothing lasts forever but the rocks, and the only constant is change, it feels like the pace of change is so fast. How is it that companies can actually gain a foothold when things are changing so rapidly? What have you seen?
It's really about change in mindset, which then creates a change in behavior. So I look back to 2008 and the financial crash that happened all over the world as sort of the tipping point of disruption going from a really big thing to a crazy, disruptive, chaotic experience that requires a very bigger adaptation than happened before. So before 2008, companies were having a strategic vision. I mean, the typical Harvard business student would learn strategic planning, that you have a 5-year or a 10-year plan. The Japanese had a 200-year plan. You would then set strategic goals, right? Long-term goals to help you reach that vision. And then you would set shorter-term objectives to help you move forward toward that vision. And you would course correct along the way. The underlying assumption was you could predict the future. You could predict a few years ahead of time. 2008 changed our illusion about all that. Now you can't predict 3 minutes from now. Mm-hmm. And so the people who are still trying to do the old strategic planning, business planning model are the people in the companies that are not succeeding very well in this highly disruptive, volatile environment. So the shift that I see is from strategic planning to what we call a culture of opportunity. So you remember Peter Drucker had this famous quote that culture eats strategy for lunch and that, you know, you could have whatever strategy you wanted, but if the culture didn't support it, then your strategy was out of luck. Peter's no longer with us, but I would say to him, if he was here today, culture and strategy have to actually sit down to lunch together, that the strategy has to emerge from the culture. That's the shift that I'm really excited to share with your listeners today.
Okay. And can you talk a little bit about what exactly do you mean by a culture of opportunity? It feels very conceptual. So when you're describing that, also give an example of what that looks like in a small business.
A culture of opportunity is a mindset that whatever happens to your business is something that could happen for your business. So, for example, when the economy turns down and the unemployment rate goes up, the amount of capital available in the marketplace to buy goods and services goes down, the typical way was, bad business cycle. I've got to cut back. I've got to wait it out. I got to wait until things get better, and then I can hire people and I can be more aggressive and all that. That's a very reactive way of thinking that I can't do anything about what I consider to be a negative impact on me. The culture of opportunity says, okay, what is the opportunity in this marketplace? So if you look back to 2008, the companies that struggled and some of them failed at the top of their market, Nokia, Blockbuster, Research in Motion, Radio Shack, Yahoo, tons of these companies, they saw the economic downturn as something that they had to protect themselves against. They did not innovate. They did not change. They did not invest in adapting. They tried to just constrain themselves and get through it, and they didn't. You look at other companies like Google, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Zappos, TED, which is a nonprofit, you know, the media company. Mm-hmm. All of those organizations got stronger, more resilient, and more adaptive through the worst economic crisis we've had since the Great Depression, because they had a culture of opportunity that said, what happens out in the market is not good nor bad. It just is. How do we adapt? Where is the value we can find for our customer? Where is the value we can find for our shareholders, for our employees, for our communities? It's a totally different mindset.
Yeah, it sounds like very not like very. It sounds very zen just to be able to say it is. Let's not place the value judgment on it. Okay, as you say, our landscape has been disrupted. It has changed. What do we do next?
Well, very zen in the sense that the Asian philosophy is to really accept what nature brings you. So zen and the I Ching and, you know, the Taoist philosophies always moved with the way nature happened to them. They didn't try to fight nature, destroy nature, overcome nature. They just felt more flexible with it. So it's really a way to say, what is happening out there is reality. It's not good or bad. It's just what it is. How do we actually move through that? So for a professional services firm, for a small business, you have to actually set up your business to be resilient and flexible. So how do you do that? One is you have everybody in the company, from the owner of the company all the way on down, constantly looking out in the environment to see opportunities that are right for your company, and having an actual methodology to figure out what opportunities should you go for and what opportunities should you not go for.
Okay.
So the classic thing is to define the business results that you need to accomplish, you know, 3 or 4 years from now. What we say is define the business results that you actually have to accomplish this year. Once you know what you're already committed to, that frames the groundwork of how you're going to become a much more intentional and resilient, adaptive company.
So
what am I committed to right now?
Okay. And let me just interrupt. So if you talk about a business result, would that include, let's say, I need to hit certain revenue targets?
Yeah. The first thing is I know how much money am I spending and how much money do I need to make? So if I have a certain amount of rent I have to pay, I have a certain number of employees I have to pay, whatever my expenses are, I know that the very minimal, I have to bring in X amount of revenue at Y amount of profit. So I got to know, bottom line, what am I already committed to? A lot of businesses don't even know that. I mean, it sounds absurd, but a lot of businesses don't spend enough time realizing what they're already committed to. When you know what you're committed to, then you got to know this is a starting point from which I can move forward into the future. Second thing they got to know is what actually works in my company. What is my success DNA? Because if you actually look at the 5 or so most successful projects you've done in the last 3 or 4 years, you'll actually see a pattern of what works for your particular company. So when you map the conditions in the marketplace and the conditions inside your organization with each success, do it 4 or 5 times and then look at the biggest failure you had, you'll have this aha moment, say, wow, when we succeed, we're committed to doing whatever it takes. We leverage what we're really good at. We communicate very well. We add the resources we need. You know, whatever your particular success DNA is. Mm-hmm. And when we fail, typically we go off that pattern. We get greedy. We get scared. We don't really put our full effort into it. We try to do something we're not good at. We don't communicate well. Once you own your success pattern, you can actually leverage it. You look at the greatest companies in the world. Google and Apple are two wonderful examples. They have their own success DNA. And when they leverage it, which they do almost all the time, it's brilliant. So Apple is an example. Their success DNA is design it beautifully, functional, leverage what you did the last time. So the iPod became the iPhone. The iPhone became the iPhone 2 and 3 and 4. The iPad became the iPad mini. And so they leverage what works in the marketplace and they release it only when it's perfect, right? That's what makes them great. Design, simplicity, perfection, and this amazing fan base, and their customer service is extraordinary.
Okay.
Remember about 3 years ago, they kicked Google Maps off the iPhone and they replaced it with the Apple product, the iMap.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Public relations disaster. It wasn't ready. It wasn't anything that they did well before. It was just something that Steve Jobs, from his grave, said, do anything we can do to screw Google. And it was absolutely against their success DNA. They fired the head of the IMAPS group. They put the Google Maps back on the iPhone. And it was just a lesson learned for them why they shouldn't go off their success DNA. So your company has to own what you're great at and see what you're not great at, and make sure you're actually leveraging your own individual success.
Can you describe, because sometimes people might go to the normal things. Oh, yeah, I've had success in doing certain kinds of projects, but are there ways to evaluate it in the sense that you might be surprised at the results that, or the answers that you get? So can you describe maybe a client that you've worked with where what they thought they were most successful at turned out to be something different?
Sure. So when people look at what they're successful at, what they look at are the skills and competencies and resources of the company, which is the good first step. The next step is what was actually going on in the marketplace when they were successful. That's the missing link. So the great companies understand that in a down, volatile market, that's when they soar. Some companies are amazingly adaptive and fantastic. When markets get disruptive, that's when they're great. When the markets are even and not volatile, which isn't that much of the time these days, they actually have to coast, and they're really not at their strongest. So an example of a company is we worked with a private equity real estate firm that did amazingly well during the real estate crash because they were very, very good at looking at deals that were undervalued, properties that were nobody else would buy because the market wasn't buying anything. They had a great due diligence process, and they succeeded when the real estate markets were disrupted in any particular geography. They were there, and they were able to go in and make a deal and create a tremendous amount of value. In a flat, sort of even market, they weren't as good. So they looked for around the country and then later on around the world, really disruptive markets where they can go in and they could add their value.
Interesting. So it sounds like there are, again, a lot of opportunities to look at within your own business, not just to keep throwing money at a problem or to say, oh, the economy is terrible. Either, you know, I should hold back and I should shrink, or necessarily to throw money at the problem in order to grow. But it looks like it's a more holistic evaluation of the resources you have in your business. So how do you achieve business goals by evaluating the resources you already have?
Right. Well, Nina, that's a really, really important point. I want to emphasize that. If you believe that you have all the resources that you need inside your company and in the ecosystem directly connected to your company, that alone is a mindset shift that will allow you to succeed in any environment. If you believe you do not have the resources and you're constantly operating from a model of scarcity and struggling to find the next customer, the next investor, the next employee, you will not succeed in this new environment. So let me give you a quick algorithm from LinkedIn that might help you really understand what I mean by this. So most small businesses will say, I never have enough customers. I never have enough new products. I never have this or I never have that. But if you look at your network, so I have, as an example, about 1,800 people who are first connection to me in LinkedIn. Okay. So if you go into your LinkedIn profile page, there's an algorithm that will tell you how many people are connected to you 3 degrees of separation from you, mm-hmm. right? So you've heard of the old 6 degrees of separation. So only 3 degrees of separation from me. So if I sent it out an email and I said, Business Breakthrough Podcast is the most extraordinary podcast in the world about business. If you don't listen to it, your life will be miserable and you'll be unsuccessful. And you have to then tell every one of your friends and colleagues about Nina Kaufman, Business Breakthrough. So I send it out to my 1,800 people, and each one of them sends it out to their first degree connections and then to their first degree connections, right? So imagine this humongous tree, 3 degrees of separation from me. How many people do you think I could reach 3 degrees of separation from my 1,800 direct connections?
Well, having seen the algorithm on my LinkedIn profile, probably close to 1 million.
Well, it's actually about 16 million.
Whoa.
So yeah. 3 degrees, maybe 2 degrees, it just gets exponentially bigger. So wow. If you realize that, you say, you know what? Every single client that I need, every single employee that I need, every investor, every new product, every new idea is already exists in my ecosystem 3 degrees of separation from me. My job is to figure out the best way to find it, not to think I don't have it. So how does that change my business strategy? Well, rather than necessarily hiring an advertising firm or a public relations firm or marketing firm, which you may need, but first, let's look at your existing network and figure out how do you connect to it. So the way that we help our clients do this is by building a resource map, which is actually a mind map of your resource ecosystem, starting from the people that are most key to you, right? And we break those people down into three categories: connectors, people with large social networks, experts who are experts in their field, and accelerators who are a unique combination of experts and connectors, organizations you're affiliated with, right, which could be your alumni association, it could be your professional association, your trade association, your local community group, what have you, the markets that you do business in, right? So if you're, let's say you're an attorney and you're in the real estate market and you're also in the professional services market and you're in the local geography where you live, right? There's a multiple different markets you're in. The sources of capital that you have could be banks, SBA, friends and family, et cetera. The knowledge that you have, both proprietary and just general specific knowledge that's important and unique to you, and the communication you have, which is your website, your email, your social media, your public relations. When you connect the dots of all those things, you start to say, wow, I already have the ability to reach much more people and get what I need right there. So an example on your map might be your university, and you realize, you know what? I have a whole group of alumni that I haven't reached out to in years that I was very friendly with, and they have careers now, and they have a whole set of their own resources that I can connect to, right? You might do a customer analysis. You might find out, you know, guess what? 60% of my new customers in the last 2 years come out of the real estate market. But you know what? I've never actually focused in that as a market that I can connect into the associations and trade groups and networking groups in that market, right? So it's about being intentional and strategic with the resources you have and making them visible to you.
Okay. And does this also include looking at the resources within each of the employees or the, let's say, the close vendors or independent contractors that we work with on a regular basis?
Absolutely. That really makes your firm even more powerful if you access the resources of your employees and your vendors and your partners, even your customers. I'll give you a quick example of this. We had a client several years ago, actually about 3 years ago, that was a leading nonprofit in New York focused on adult literacy. They wanted to launch the first ever national summit on adult literacy, which is a major crisis around the country. 30% of New Yorkers are functionally illiterate. So they wanted to bring together business leaders, philanthropists, educators, media around this topic and help create a greater level of awareness, increase their brand, and increase their ability to get funded for the work that they do. So they came to us and said, we have this great idea. We have no idea how to invite the people and get the kind of people we want. So we built the first resource map, and it had 26 people, 17 organizations, 5 markets, huge amount of knowledge, much of it proprietary, very strong communication, and 3 sources of capital, only 3, which were the 3 funders they had. So then we said, all right, let's do a second pass at the map. And rather than just have a handful of people, a couple of board members and the executive director and the CFO do it, let's open it up to the entire board and staff, and let's use a burning platform question. If you had 3 months to raise $3 million or the company goes out of business, who would you contact? What resources would you access? Suddenly, Nina, 17 new sources of capital come on the map like that. 3 of them with the last name of Soros, as in George Soros. So imagine the scene in the room where everybody is looking at each other saying, who the heck knows George Soros and his 2 children? How come these 17 sources of capital, we never knew about them? So in the corner, shrinking, her head bowed, was the director of programming, who sheepishly said, well, I know the Soros family and I put most of these new contacts on the map. Why didn't you tell us before? How come you didn't say? Nobody ever asked me. I work in the programming department. I have never been invited to a development meeting. Now, mind you, Nina, this is an organization of 15 people, 1-5. People that sit within 10 and 20 feet with one another. Not a big bureaucratic corporation spread around the world, but a small nonprofit. So what we learned from that is most organizations, big or small, have no methodology and no culture to share resources. So what happened from this? We actually did launch the first ever National Summit on Adult Literacy. We had academics from Harvard. We had funders there. We had people from CUNY. We had people from the AARP, which really cared about this issue. And they, the organization, our client, gained a high level of awareness. They gained funding from it. And they created an amazing network that they still access to this day. It was a mindset shift from scarcity to abundance, starting from what they already had. So to your point, yes, using all of those resources, your existing employees who might have far more resources you don't even know about, to your customers, to your funders, to your partners, your vendors, all those people are part of your ecosystem.
And it sounds like once a business has a better sense of these resources and collaborative relationships, they are on a much better path to actually achieving sustainable business instead of the constant going out and hunting and foraging and praying that that something's going to work. So yeah. So in your experience,
yes, absolutely.
How do you shift and shape those relationships so that there is that constant stream of business flowing in?
Great question. So you start with data. You start with knowledge. And you say, all right, let's look at where my customers, where my clients are coming from. And let's create a map of how did they get to us? Let's make sure we're gathering the data. So you have to actually be aware that you need to gather the data. So if you're a professional service firm, let's use that as an example, and you find out that the best clients that you have, the most profitable, the ones that give you the most business, come from a handful of referral sources. Like we get an enormous number of our referrals, the best ones from an accounting firm. Once we realized that, we started developing an intentional relationship with the accounting firm. We would go in there, we would deliver professional development seminars for their staff about things that they needed to learn to service their clients better and to help them identify not only how could they service their clients better, but when they needed us to come in and help at the level that we could help in. As that relationship developed, it went from one or two people making those referrals to 5, 6, and 7 people making those referrals. Mm. So data first, creating your identification of who those strategic partners are and putting resources in building that relationship.
That's great. And so just before we wrap, I want to come back to, in a way, where we started, that seeing the possibilities and the opportunities does mean a mindset shift. What's involved, and especially if you're more than one person in an organization, what's involved in helping to make that shift? Because it's so easy to fall back into that sense of, you know, anytime you turn on the news, the world's coming to an end. So how do you stay focused on the opportunities and the positive relationships as opposed to shrinking back and make sure that everyone in the organization does that too?
Right. Great question. So the one missing piece, in addition to what we've already talked about, is having what we call an opportunity team. And that team could be 2 people, 3 people, 4 people. It doesn't have to be a huge team, but there's got to be at least one person, preferably 2 or 3, from outside of your organization that is willing to challenge the status quo. So it could be a consultant from the outside. It could be an investor. It could be one of your customers, one of your vendors. But you want to assemble a group of people that you meet with on a regular basis, maybe 2-3 times a year, where you do your looking out to the future and to the present and making sure that you're actually seeing the opportunities. You're using your success DNA. You're using your resource map. You're using all of the resources inside of your organization. So you're constantly challenging the belief, well, we don't have enough. So having outside input, you know, they say that you are the sum of the 5 people that are most closely connected to you. So your income, your weight, your health, your success in business, can be determined by the five people who influence you the most in those areas. So if you draw a map with you in the center and the five most influential people, you're going to see that your homeostasis is directly connected to the sum of those people. Once you change those people and you bring in more abundant people, more strategic people, more opportunity-seeking people, you'll start to change the shift of your own thinking and the effectiveness of your business.
Wonderful. Well, Mark, I think we've covered a lot, and it reminds me, as I think about, as I've been running more and thinking more about athletics, that the importance is to be a little more nimble and flexible in our businesses in terms of not only seeing the opportunities, but being willing to move into different avenues instead of just being rigid and staying still, which is, and I'm part of understanding the new normal, that things are going to change, as you say, every 3 minutes. So yeah, you better get used to it.
And you got to work at being more nimble and flexible, right? So as you do, you work at it. And so as you work at it, the more you do, the more nimble and flexible you are, and then it becomes a virtuous circle.
Absolutely. And also one that has a ripple effect into the business as a whole that enables it to continue without just resting on your shoulders alone. So, Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. Really, really eye-opening stuff.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Nina.
And thanks to you for tuning in today. You know, I really want you to have a breakthrough in your business as well. So as a loyal listener, I want to give you free access to one of my special video trainings that I call Ignite. In this Ignite webinar, I share my quick growth scale formula that lets you bust through the plateau, design a self-sustaining business, and live the life you deserve. You can get free access by going to businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Again, that's businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Go there now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Business Breakthrough.